This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you so much for being with us here in the Situation Room, where speech isn't violence, tolerance isn't love, and disagreement isn't hate. We appreciate you being with us on this Wednesday afternoon, evening. I'm not sure what to call it anymore. The sun's still up. It's kind of weirding me out, but I actually have no problem with just doing away with daylight savings altogether, but that's not the reason we're here. We are, of course, here to discuss what is going on in the state of Alabama, and as we have for the past several weeks since this thing really started to become a big news story, we will start with our coronavirus update. So let's go ahead and go to the latest numbers from the Alabama Department of Public Health. So if you look at these, you can see that we have 2,472 deaths, 18,982,000 who have been tested, and the ones that we know for sure have been killed by the coronavirus, 48. And that's probably the biggest news out of these numbers that you're going to see so far, is that our death toll has been on a substantial increase this entire time. Now, we've had some increases that are more or less impressive, things that have been in accordance with the models, things that haven't been. Unfortunately, even though some other factors, including the amount of testing we're doing, the amount of coronavirus cases we have in the Yellowhammer State, those have fluctuated a little bit. How many more of those we get every day, they can vary quite a bit. That has not been the case, really, at least the past several days, with the death rate. It continues to go up. Now, granted, in a state that currently has 4.88 million people, 39 deaths is, really infinitesimally small. It's such a tiny percentage of the population, but the reason that this is something that is concerning, the reason that this is something that we need to keep an eye on, is because, A, it's probably going to get significantly worse as this thing goes on, and B, well, yeah, the deaths look insignificant if you're looking at them as raw numbers, but when you consider the fact that these are people's lives, that people that are in this situation have families, and that it affects them, it's going to affect, everybody around them, it takes on a much more personal meaning, and why we're concerned about this and keeping this up. I am going to speak a little bit later to some of that, but right now the big thing is that there are 9 new deaths, which is the most in a single day since we've been recording it. We have not had a day that went over 7, which was yesterday. So the issue with this is that it is on a constant upward trajectory, and if this thing winds up going like the total coronavirus cases did in the state of Alabama, and it would, you know, just like everywhere else in the world, the more cases that you have, the more your death toll is going to be. If it follows the pattern, the overall pattern that we have seen of the confirmed cases in this state, then that spike is just going to continue to go up. Now, what this does do, though, and what these new numbers do give us that is a good thing, because you may recall that yesterday, one of the things that we were talking about is they did not have a single new test, which seemed really odd because, A, does that mean you shut down every single testing facility, or that every single one got saturated or full to capacity all at the same time? That seemed very unlikely. And today there were substantially more tests that were done, and so that probably lends itself to explaining why that was taking place. And we'll go ahead and look on our second graphic over here, if I can do that. So this is the number of new tests, and it's only a single day number. So this isn't the total number of testing. This is merely how many new tests we're doing each and every day. You'll notice that yesterday's, or I guess today's number, rather, is substantially higher than all of the others, and the ones from yesterday are literally zero. And considering we had such a massive swell of tests, what happened? Did we double the amount of tests that we were doing today as opposed to 2 days ago? No, it seems what happened, and I'm thinking that this is what really went on, based on that graphic, based on the numbers that I'm looking at, there was probably either some kind of recording error to where the numbers didn't get put in yesterday. Now, maybe that was because it just a mistake by somebody. It's also possible that the recording was wrong or that they had some reason to believe that it was incorrect. And so they decided to, I think this is the most likely scenario, by the way, just kind of hold at the number that they had and not report the new testing from yesterday until today when they were sure that they had their numbers correct. That seems to me to be the most likely outcome. That's the most likely explanation for why we saw this happen yesterday and then saw an almost doubling, not quite a doubling, it's close. Our second biggest day a couple days ago was, I think, about 2,200, and today we were at 4,200, so it's not quite a doubling, but it's darn close. And when you consider that we had none yesterday and almost double what we had 3 days ago today, it's very, very likely that what happened is there was some kind of issue with getting those numbers out there in the reports. It's unlikely that tests weren't being processed or that they just weren't able to get the results back for 24 hours for the entire state. That seems unlikely. It seems as though it was more of a bean counting error than anything else. So one thing that I did want to bring your attention on that, because I think we solved that mystery, but even more importantly, you'll notice that if you're looking at the number of tests, they are more or less going in an upward trajectory. And I think that that has a lot to do with how we've handled this and how everything's been happening. We've actually done fairly well when it comes to being able to test and throw this thing together in the dead of the night very quickly on a spur of the moment. And so I think that really that is a testament to how well we have done. Of course, there have been hiccups. Of course, there have been issues that we've had. And as I went over yesterday, though Alabama is roughly, when it comes to overall testing and the amount of testing that we're doing, we're about on par, most likely, with states like Mississippi and Georgia, but we're significantly underperforming considering that we're 45th in the nation, and that on top of that, because remember, these numbers were adjusted per capita, so this is, we're not just comparing raw numbers here, that we were also significantly lower than our neighbors Florida and Tennessee. So we've probably not done great on the testing. And there's a number of factors that could go into that. It may be that we're just legitimately not as sick, and because there are people that are asymptomatic, they're not going in to get tested, so our testing looks worse per capita compared to other states. It's also possible that we have just as many sick people as our neighbors. That seems unlikely when you're considering that our neighbors are the ones that are doing a lot better than us per capita, Florida and Tennessee. That seems unlikely because Florida, all over the state, well, maybe not in the panhandle, but pretty much everywhere else, has major ports of entry to the United States and also has several large major metropolitan areas. And we've seen a trend that has been going on with this virus nationwide, that if you have major metropolitan areas with large populations, densely populated areas, the virus seems to spread much quicker and even spreads into the more rural and suburban populations, just because that population center becomes such a hotbed for that virus breeding. And so when you compare us to Florida and Tennessee, Tennessee, of course, has Memphis, Nashville, Knoxville, all cities that are larger than our cities. Knoxville may be pretty comparable to Birmingham, Huntsville numbers, but certainly larger major metropolitan areas, especially Nashville, than anything in the state of Alabama. And so I say all that to say, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. We are probably falling behind them to some degree, but it doesn't look nearly as bad as it is. We're also legitimately less sick than they are, which is why less people are getting tested. That's probably a contributing factor. I'm not saying that we can't ramp up our testing. I'm not trying to make excuses for the state of Alabama. I'm just saying that is very likely when you're looking at the variables that may be going into this. So let's talk about, and I said that we were going to revisit this in a second, let's talk about the death toll, because the death toll is getting on up there. And I know that it's just 9 new ones per day, and it was 7 new ones yesterday, but what I'm worried about is if this thing continues to go up, because remember, it almost doubled in the span of 2 days. We were at 5 just a couple of days ago, and 5 new deaths a couple of days ago, and now we're getting on up into 9 and have almost doubled that. Well, if we start doubling our numbers every 2 days, you don't have to be a mathematician to figure out that's going to be something that's really terrifying in the future. I don't think that's on the horizon, but we, since we're seeing it, we do have to remember that and keep that in mind. Now, like I said, there is a lag on the death rate because this thing isn't infecting a person and then the day after they're infected, they keel over. That's just not a thing. Most of the people that are getting tested as well, they're getting tested a few days before it gets really serious. And so luckily that's not something that's happened. And I know that yesterday a whole bunch of people were upset about this, and that's understandable. If the projections are showing that we're going to stay on course and basically continue this course of action for about another month or so, which the White House is already basically said that they'd like for the states to do. They are asking states to voluntarily hold off until the beginning of May on getting everything back up and running and you know, still social distancing, still advising them to wash their hands and everything, but basically everybody stay home and lay low until about the 1st of May. And if we continue with that current pattern, based on the new numbers that we're seeing, there are some projections that would show that Alabama would not have any hospital bed shortages. Now, that is in no way concrete, and that is also, remember, contingent upon us doing what we're doing and being able to hold out on that for several more weeks. So there's several qualifiers you want to throw in there. But I mean, if that's the case, that's wonderful news. Because Alabama, a state that is legitimately one of the ones in the most danger when it comes to not having hospital beds, not having doctors and nurses. We do have hospital beds, and we're actually above average on that one. One of the states that is in the most danger for that, the fact that we are a little bit better off than most of the other states, that we're actually doing pretty well. I believe we were 13th when I looked into this, on availability of hospital beds versus our population. That's something that's actually going to really help us, and we have reached that threshold to where there are some projections that are saying Alabama will experience no hospital bed shortages, which is fantastic news because as horrible as any death is because of this pandemic, if people die because they got the virus and got sick and passed, I mean, yes, that's horrible. But what's far worse is if we just, because of our own lack of preparedness, didn't have enough facilities, medical supplies, and hospital beds to take care of them, and then you have a situation like you had in China and Italy and Spain and a few other places that have been hit hard, that they're just having to turn patients away because they don't have anywhere to put them. Or they're having to make decisions based on who lives and who dies because they just don't have enough medical equipment. It looks as though right now, as things stand, and these projections change on almost a daily basis, there are at least a couple of projections that would show that we went under that threshold to where Alabama would have a hospital bed shortage. So that's something to really celebrate. It's also something to continue to be vigilant on because, like I said, those models are contingent upon us continuing to do this for the foreseeable future. Now, I know that there was some controversy yesterday, and I'd like to speak to this very quickly. I know that there was quite a bit of controversy yesterday on how we were counting coronavirus deaths. And so this happened also in a White House brief where they were asking about, okay, what constitutes a coronavirus death? Are they also counting people that just were positive for coronavirus, but something completely unconnected to that could kill them? And the answer was basically yes. If you have a heart attack but you tested positive for coronavirus, then that technically counts as a coronavirus death. And a lot of people were very aghast by this, were really bothered by it. I understand that, and I'm not saying there can't be improvements made on how we count this thing, but you do have to, when a human being dies, it's very rare that it's one single thing that causes them to die. It's almost always multiple cases. I was looking at some research about this earlier today that roughly 70-ish%, about 70% of all deaths in America are multiple causes of death. And so when you sit down and think about that, that's an awful lot of deaths in the United States that, you know, it may be a number of different factors. It may be things like they had diabetes, they had cancer, that they were smokers, but you know, they wound up getting something else, and then pneumonia caused it. Like, there's a thousand different combinations that can cause the human body to not be able to maintain homeostasis, to stay alive. And so it's very common for there to be multiple causes of death. And I understand what we don't want is some kind of scenario to where, oh, the guy had coronavirus, and then as he was walking home, got shot in the face. That's a coronavirus death. No, I mean, that's extreme, and I don't think that they would actually count that one based on what we've, you know, there's conflicting reports on that. Some people are saying, yes, that would count. Some people are saying, no, it wouldn't count. But when you're talking about something like heart attacks, it's important to remember that recent research and studies have shown that this particular virus, the Wuhan flu, it does contribute to heart problems and causes heart damage. And so a heart attack in a person that has coronavirus, maybe they had risk factors beforehand. And you may remember that we've said from a very early time on this that the vast majority of the people who die from this virus are going to be people that have other things wrong with them ahead of time. If you're a perfectly healthy person with no other conditions existing beforehand, you're probably going to survive it. And so if we just stopped basically counting any deaths where anybody had anything else wrong with them, there would be basically no deaths. That's the point that we're bringing up here, is that if you're wanting to get a realistic picture of the damage that this thing is doing, you have to include a lot of cases where there were multiple contributing factors to a person dying. A good example with this, and this is really the best one that I could come up with, I know that some of you will really appreciate that, because if you're like me, you're really missing baseball right now. Why do they count RBIs? Why do they count runs batted in as a part of a player's stat? They don't just count it when he crosses the plate, when he scores, or when he hits a home run to knock himself in. If you knock in a player, even if it's a sacrifice fly, you can still get an RBI. I don't think that would count. I'd have to ask Joe about that. Does that actually count if you do a sac fly? I don't think you get an RBI for that one. But anyway, my point in all of that is there are a lot of different factors. Now, maybe the runner that is on base would have gotten home no matter what. For example, let's say that a player is on first, or a player is on third, batter comes up, knocks that guy in with a single, and then the very next play, the next guy steps up to the plate, home run. Okay, well, that RBI is counted towards the player that actually hit the single and knocked the guy in, not the person that hit the home run. That person would have gotten home anyway. It's not his fault. He just had a super fast teammate that made it home on a single. But that's how it works. And so when it comes to this, this is kind of the same thing with coronavirus. There were multiple factors that had to stack up for this particular person, because a routine single doesn't score a run on, you know, most occasions. But sometimes it does, and that still counts as an RBI. This is the same thing. If you have a person that has diabetes, and that person gets coronavirus, and that person dies, well, did they die because they had coronavirus, or did they die because they had diabetes? Well, the answer is probably both. The fact that the person had diabetes and then got coronavirus, and those complications amassed to the point to where that person died, then it was probably both, because if that person had no diabetes, he probably would have survived. If that person had diabetes but didn't get coronavirus, also probably would have survived. And so it's one of these issues to where that has to count as a coronavirus death, because coronavirus was at the very least a contributing factor. Now, I would like to see it to where we would only count contributing factors, but unlike baseball, sometimes you just don't know. It's a lot more clear-cut when you're looking at something like that, but with medical science, which is, you know, amazing the level that we've advanced to, but at the same time, there's still so much about the human body, anatomy, physiology that we do not understand. But when it comes to that, you can't definitively say whether or not the virus contributed to that or not in most cases, and that's why they're kind of erring on the side of judgment and just counting everything. Now, other nations, and this was the subject of discussion as well, have tended to not do that, which is part of the reason this subject got brought up in the first place, is that they were discussing this compared to other nations that are recording their deaths, and they're much more picky on what constitutes a coronavirus death. And so because of that, when you're looking at the deaths that are happening, for example, in Italy, and this is one of the countries they use it as an example, which is being much more choosy on whether or not to count something as a coronavirus death or not, and you compare that to the United States, well, if we're a lot more liberal in what we count as a death and they're not, then even if we wound up having roughly the same numbers per capita, that would be a bad comparison because there were probably an awful lot more Italian people that would have been counted if they were using our rubric as opposed to theirs, and vice versa. So the important thing to understand with that is, and this is true with any kind of country-to-country comparison, that different countries count things in different ways, and you should be cautious about using it as a perfect one-to-one comparison. Now, we got to compare what we got. We got to work with the data that we have. But ultimately, it is important to remember that if the rubric is different, the way that you're counting it is different, that is going to cause the data and the comparison of that data to be somewhat skewed when placed next to each other. So what is the right way to do this? I don't know. I don't know which way is the right way. I don't know if it's better to do more what America is doing, to where virtually everybody that has coronavirus that dies, that gets counted, versus Europe, which digs into it a little more. And basically, some of those countries are doing everything they can to keep those numbers down. And because of that, they have taken a very strict approach to it, that basically the person had to almost exclusively get killed by the coronavirus, if that was the case, or in a way that was very definitively caused by the virus. But either way, I'm not sure what is the right way to do it, or if there even is a right way, because you have to look at what the data is telling you. But ultimately, I think that what we have to remember is that this data from America and everywhere else is getting more useful day by day. The longer it goes, the more useful this data is going to be, because the more comprehensive and complete it will be. And that's frustrating for a numbers guy like me that wants all the data right now so I can make a decision on it. And it drives me crazy, but that's the way that this thing works. And so because of that, we're looking at the data as it's being compiled. And because of that, there are errors being made now. And also, when all this is said and done and the smoke is cleared and we finally crawl out of our corona caves and shave our corona beards off, only for the men, not the women, despite what liberals will tell you, they still can't grow beards except in special circumstances. But anyway, when all of that happens and we look at the data in hindsight, we're going to know a lot more about it. And we're also going to look back, regardless of how well we do, and see that there were errors made and try to correct those errors as much as humanly possible, hopefully, so we can use that data and prepare for something like this in the future. How successful that's going to be, I'm not sure. And how useful that data is going to be, or are we making a big mess of this, or are we only doing pretty good just making a few errors because we're in the thick of it, I'm not sure. But ultimately, we have to work with what we've got. And right now, I think that the best policy for working with what we got is to err on the side of caution and count, be a little bit more liberal in our counting practices to get a more realistic idea of how much death that the coronavirus has caused. That's my opinion. I get that you can have a difference of opinion on that, and I don't think you're necessarily wrong for that. Like I said, I'm not sure there actually is a right answer, but I think that's the one that is going to give us the best data going forward based on what I'm seeing right now. I tell you what, we need to go ahead and wrap it up because my church's live stream has actually already started, so I'm going to have to hop off real quick and do that. If you do want to join with us, it's the Dalrata Church of Christ. They've got Doug doing the sermon tonight, our regular minister. He's going to be doing something on the patriarchs. We've also got a lot of really good content from Brother Melvin Ote, who gave the sermon this Sunday, and Jeremy Pate, who's doing one of his online Bible classes, Billy Camp and John Cackleman, friends of mine that are also doing some classes on there. So look, if you're bored, you got a lot, you don't have a lot to do because you're quarantined and you want some really good spiritual material, you can check out my chaplain's reports on my page. But it also might be smart to go to Dalrady Church of Christ's page and look at some of the Bible classes and the materials that they're putting up there. They have stuff ranging from about 15 to 20 minutes all the way up to a full 40-minute class. So definitely worth your time, definitely worth checking out, and we'll see you later. Stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.